It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike presents Information Please. We set up a quartet of quiz wizards, and you hurl at them the toughest questions you can think of. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your question a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now, light up a lucky strike, for here is our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, our old friends know, and our new friends are learning, that Information Please is a completely unrehearsed program. The questions aren't seen in advance by any of the experts, on or bright. As for those experts, they include this evening that walking encyclopedia whose vocation is that of sports authority, Mr. John Kieran, the inimitable verse writer and conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, Mr. Franklin P. Adams, better known as FPA, the irrepressible composer, pianist, motion picture actor, and author, the one and only Oscar Levant, and as our guest, the well-known economist and member of the National Defense Advisory Commission, Mr. Leon Henderson. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, we'll start the festivities this evening with a question coming to us from Chicago, Illinois, from Mr. S. Gordon. It's about sport cliches. Finish these sport cliches. I'll give you the first half of each one of them. And get me 4 out of 4. Here we are. A good big man, how does it go? A good big man, Mr. Levant?
Can always beat a good small man. Is that true, Mr. Kern?
That isn't part of the answer.
You're getting pretty cautious right off the reel, Mr. Kern. Yes, a good big man can always beat a good little man or a good small man. You can't hit it. You can't hit it. Mr. Kern?
Well, you want that?
No.
If you can't see it.
You're throwing them to Mr.
Levant. If you can't see it.
If you can't see it, right. The game is never over.
Well,
Mr. Kieran?
Until the last man is out.
That's right. And a good offense. Mr. Kieran?
I'll give that to Mr. Henderson.
Mr. Henderson, all right.
Is the best defense.
Mr. Kieran, have you ever been guilty of using any of these cliches in your column? I don't think so.
Not lately.
Maybe when you were a young man. Here's one, off the record. The race is not always to the swift. Mr. Adams.
Or the battle to the strong, but that is how to bet.
That is right, but that is how to bet. That gives us 4 out of 4.
That's no cliche.
You mean the second part is? The second part is an FPA coinage.
No, sir. It's written by H.E. Keogh.
You mean you stole it from Mr. Keogh?
I did not steal it. Always gave him credit for it.
Did you put it in quotes? Funny, I've always associated that line with you, Mr. Adams. But I didn't know that it was originally invented by Mr. Keogh.
He has the credit in such small print after a while.
You might say he gives him credit, but he's, how about the cash?
I don't know. I don't think it was much cash for a single line. You don't get much royalties on that, Mr. Henderson. What can you do with this one, gentlemen? That was too easy. That was just to start you off and give you a little false self-confidence. Here's one from Giles E. Irvine of Flushing, New York. Get all on this, too. What position did the following presidents hold when they were first nominated for the presidency? I have 3. 1, Hoover. What position did he hold when he was first nominated? To Mr. Henderson.
Secretary of Commerce.
Yes, and whose cabinet, Mr. Henderson?
In Coolidge.
That's quite right. The second would be Woodrow Wilson. Mr. Henderson.
Governor of New Jersey.
Yes, and finally, Coolidge. Coolidge? Mr. Levant.
He was vice president.
Ah, we caught you there.
When he was nominated for presidency.
No, when he was first nominated for the presidency.
When he was first nominated for presidency, he was vice president.
No, Mr. Adams?
He was president.
That's right. Yes, of course. He was president. He was only nominated for his second term. Well, that, I'm afraid, gives us 1 wrong. And that makes a lucky strike for Mr. Irvine and sends $25 to him for the Great Britannic. Mary Irvin of New York sends this one. It's about giving. Get 3 out of 4 if you can. First, what will be given the devil? What will be given the devil, Mr. Kieran?
His due.
Do you know where the line comes from, Mr. Kieran? It's a well-known line, give the devil his due.
No, I really don't know.
Maybe I can transfer it to you by extrasensory...
Shakespeare.
That's right, Mr. Adams. You and I, Mr. Adams, are buddies this way. He will give the devil his due. It's from King Henry...
Fifth.
Oh, fourth. Fourth. Don't exaggerate. King Henry the Fourth. What should you give a man? What should you give a man? Mr. Kieran.
Give a man a horse that can ride.
That's good. That's going great, Mr. Kieran.
What about a pipe he can smoke? Oh, you give me a man.
Give a man a horse he can ride. Give a man a boat he can sail, and so forth. That is almost always sung by aspiring baritones on the way over on shipboard. What was the maid of Athens asked to give? Mr. Adams.
Oh, give me back my heart.
Yes. No, can you give us the two lines?
Maid of Athens, ere we part, give me back my heart.
Beautifully said. And who wrote them, Mr. Adams?
Probably Byron.
That's right. Byron is right.
Ends up Zoe Moussas Agapo in Greek.
Taking over the prerogatives of Mr. Kieran, are you?
No.
The Greek is all his.
I had no idea that Mr. Adams was an old Grecian, Mr. Kieran. Did you?
Yes, indeed I did.
Right these days I am.
It's fashionable now.
Classic quartet. What should be given in the May time?
Pardon?
What should be given in the May time? Mr. Levant, Mr. Adams?
Arouse then.
Say, that's good. What's it from?
The Stein Song by Richard Hovey.
Gee. No, I think When Good Fellows Get Together by Frederick Bullard.
By Richard Hovey wrote the song.
Oh, the music. Or did Richard Hovey write the
Richard word? Hovey wrote the words, and Frederick Bullard wrote the music.
Oh, you've got me dead to rights. And can you give me the first two or three lines, which will remind us?
Give a rouse then in the Maytime.
For a life that knows no fear, turn nighttime into daytime with the sunlight of good cheer, Mr. Adams. Well, that's 4 out of 4. That's pretty good on the giving question. What can you do with this one? From H. Donald of San Francisco, California. Get 3 out of 4. With what do you associate each of the following numbers that appeared in the news? The first number is 158. 158. Mr. Henderson?
That was the first number in the draft?
Yes, under the Selective Service Act. Now, of course, you deserve no credit for knowing that, Mr. Henderson. You know that. That's just a little decoy. Here, we're going to get harder from now on. How about the second round? What do you associate with the second round, Mr. Adams?
Fight the other night.
Between whom?
Zivic and Davis.
Correct.
Don't know whether it was that one.
Yes, it was.
What was the situation, Mr. Levant?
It was an orgy of fouling on Mr. Davis's part. They disqualified Mr. Davis in the middle of the second round.
Yes.
Forever.
There was another fight, too, at the Garden the following week.
Between whom?
It was an outcome.
That was between
Jenkins and Lello.
Sweetwater Swatter, Jenkins, and Pete Lello.
That's right. Yes, on November 22nd. Was the situation the same, Mr. Kieran?
No, they were good, clean fighters this time, and Jenkins knocked Lello out.
That's right. Now, how about the number 50%? 50%. What would that call to mind? 50%? Mr. Adams had his hand up first.
That is roughly the amount of munitions that is to go to Great Britain and 50% roughly to go to us.
Yes, the rule of thumb of President Roosevelt. Mr. Henderson had his hand up, too, and I'm sure he's going to supply.
I'm surprised. I thought somebody was going to ask what number is the federal debt.
I looked
that up before I came. I thought some sucker was bound to answer.
That's just a waste of time looking things up.
Well, that runs into big money, doesn't it?
After all, I'm an amateur on this, and,
I'll save it.
All right, you said federal debt. How about 98? 98. Mr. Levant.
That's Tommy Harmon's number on Michigan, Mr. Adams' alumni.
Good work.
And they're not going to let anybody use that jersey again, including Mr. Adams.
That gives us 4 out of 4. The boy's doing very well this evening. How about this one from Alice G. Crowell of Los Angeles? Get 2 out of 3 if you can. This is about, fictitious lovers. What pair of fictitious lovers met for the first time under the following conditions? Met at a wrestling match. Pair of lovers who met at a wrestling match. Mr. Kieran.
As You Like It, Rosalind and Orlando.
That's right. Rosalind and Orlando in As You Like It. Now, I suppose that's probably the one case in all fiction in which a pair of lovers met at a wrestling
match.
Probably
the only on-the-level wrestling match.
Quite conceivable. Matter of fact, Mr. Kieran, was that wrestling match on the level in As You Like It?
Yes, and that was a case where a good little man beat a good big man.
How about a pair of lovers who met for the first time at a bullfight? Mr. Levant.
That has to do with Hemingway.
You'd think so. I don't remember whether in...
Death in the afternoon.
Death in the afternoon. I don't remember any particular pair of lovers.
I could be wrong. It had that feeling.
It's quite possible. Mr. Adams?
Probably in Carmen.
Oh, that's right. No, they didn't meet.
No, they didn't meet at a bullfight.
Well, I don't know of any other bullfights.
They broke up at a bullfight.
Although we've had two bullfights so far.
They did.
Mr. Kerr?
Well, after a fashion, Theseus and Ariadne.
Oh,
he went in to play the Minotaur.
And the Minotaur. That isn't really a bullfight, though, would you say, Mr. Kieran?
I know.
Mr. Levant.
I'm wrong again. Ferdinand the Bull?
No, I don't think there was any lover in Ferdinand the Bull. Perhaps you've heard the ditty beginning, "List to me while I tell you of the Spaniard who blighted my life. List to me while I tell you of the man who pinched my future wife. 'Twas at the bullfight we met him." Remember that now? It was the Spaniard who blighted her life and the girl who met at the bullfight. Gives us one wrong. You've got to get the next one right. What pair of lovers met for the first time in a fight manager's office? Mr. Levant.
Golden Boy.
And Golden Boy. What were the names of the lovers?
Luther Adler and Francis Farmer. That's the name they still have.
They're fictitious names.
Wait a minute now. He was an Italian Bonaparte.
Yes.
The girl was called something from Newark. I don't want to mention it.
Lorna Moon.
Yeah, Lorna Moon.
Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Thank you very much, Mr. Levant. How about this one from Mark D. Manning of Boston? Very simple question. Is there any living creature who has a grandfather but no father? I've never seen a blanker look.
You mean somebody whose father died and that's all?
No, I simply mean who has a grandfather but no father. No, not someone whose father died. Who simply has never had a father.
Oh.
No father at all, Mr. LeBlanc. But has a grandfather.
Send him the 10. Send him the 25.
No, I'll tell you who it is. You'll love this. It's the drone bee. It seems that drones, which, as everyone knows, are the males of honeybees, develop from unfertilized eggs, gentlemen, laid by the queen in drone cells. And therefore, they have no male parent. They're grandsons of bees. But they have a maternal grandfather, you see, since the queen is the daughter of a drone, having developed from a fertilized egg. Is that perfectly clear?
That's perfectly clear.
That's perfectly clear.
Comes to me like a bolt from the blue.
That makes a lucky strike for Mark D. Manning of Boston, and he gets a set of the Britannica, too. Now, so far, Lucky Strike announces a loss of... Thank you very much. Announces a loss of $50 and 2 sets of the Britannica. And now, Mr. Cross, who is regretting that our program isn't televised tonight.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, because with television, I could show you some of the tobacco I saw sold American down south. Now, tobacco like that costs more. It's finer, it's lighter, and it's naturally milder. So, of course, it brings a better price. Let me quote some actual figures. So far this season, according to latest reports, at Petersburg, Virginia, the American Tobacco Company has paid 40% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 40% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And our best will go to Lucky's. Well, in buying tobacco, as in buying most things, you get what you pay for. And Lucky's pay the price to get the finer, lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Why not follow the lead of the men who know tobacco best, the independent experts who smoke Lucky's 2 to 1?
And the admirable thing about your commercials, Mr. Cross, is that facts make for brevity. In this case, exactly 58 seconds. And now we'll go on with the second half of the program with a question from F. Thomas of New Orleans. Now get all on this, gentlemen. It's about famous decisions. In what famous decision was each of these men involved? The first name is Henry Ertle, E-R-T-L-E. Henry Ertle.
He's a prize fight referee. I'm just trying to decision he made. Was that the fight down in Georgia?
That's right.
McTeague and... Stribling.
That's right, yes. Remember the situation, Mr. Kieran?
Why, yes. Stribling was a local boy down there, very popular and a good fighter, too. And Mike McTeague was a veteran Irishman, went down to fight Stribling. It was a very close fight.
McTeague was from the north. Perhaps that's
the north,
be made clear.
The south of Ireland, but the north of this country.
Yeah.
So it was a close fight, and first, Ertle, who was brought down there by McTeague's manager, of course, did his noble duty in that direction and said that McTeague won. Then they offered to hang him for as little as 2 cents. So he changed his mind and said that Stribling won. And he made about 6 or 7 decisions and ran out of the place.
That's approximately correct, yes. And that took place a long time ago. Mr. Kieran's memory goes back a long way. That was 1924.
That was the Dred Ertle decision, wasn't it?
How about this one?
Roger B. Taney. Roger B. Taney, Mr. Henderson.
Now, that isn't Taney, that's Taney.
I beg your pardon.
It had to do with the Dred Scott decision. It was a decision that Lincoln had said this decision must be reversed.
What was the Dred Scott decision?
Well, it
Mr.
had to
Henderson.
Do with a slave that was taken into, as far up as Minnesota, and question as whether he could be sold, or he was sold. It was taken up the Supreme Court, and Taney said that I believe that a Negro has no rights that a white man must respect.
Well, more specifically, that in going from a slave state to a free state, he didn't become free. Of course, that was
It was a technical decision, is what Mr. Kieran would call a technical knockout. It was that he had no status in the Supreme Court because he was not a citizen of the United States.
I see. Yes,
I think
right.
His owners later set him free, however.
Well, the important thing was not what happened
to Dred
Scott.
We want happy
Scott,
endings, I understand, on this program.
Well, it took a long time before we got that particular happy ending. How about William Halloran? William Halloran. What decision was William Halloran involved in? Mr. Levant.
Last year, the football game between the Giants and the Redskins.
What was that about, Mr.
It was a place kick, I think, in the last quarter by Washington. And if it was ruled good, they would have won the game. Yeah. However, it was not ruled good. I was there, and I don't know whether it was good.
Well, supposedly, the ball might have gone between the goalposts, but it was kicked up very hard.
Very hard.
It was doubtful which decision was proper. At any rate, the Giants won 9-7. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3 on these decisions. What can you do with this one, gentlemen? It's about poetry. This is from Fay P. LeConte, Jr. of Williamsburg, Virginia. I'm going to read you a very brief poem consisting of 4 lines. And each line is taken from another famous poem. Identify each of the lines. In the forests of the night, when first she gleamed upon my sight, I looked to heaven and tried to pray. Take, oh, take those lips away. Now we have to get each line. Mr. Adams, begin with the first one.
What is the first
one? In the Forests of the Night.
That's from William Blake, Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright.
That's quite right. Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, In the Forests of the Night. Now the second line is, when first she gleamed upon my sight. Mr. Kieran.
That's Wordsworth.
That's Wordsworth.
She was a vision of delight when first she gleamed upon my sight.
Make it phantom. She was a phantom,
phantom
of delight.
Right, pardon
when first
me.
She gleamed upon my sight, a lovely apparition sent to be a moment's ornament. That's the second line. The third line, I looked to heaven and tried to pray. That's the toughest of the 4, I think. Mr. Adams.
Do we have to get all of them?
Yes, everyone.
I think that's from The Ancient Mariner.
That's quite right.
Gee.
The Ancient Mariner is right, and that's not easy. Can you give us the lines that surround it, Mr. Adams? That would be asking too much, even of you.
No, I can't.
I'll provide them. I looked to heaven and tried to pray, but or ever a prayer had gushed, a wicked whisper came and made my heart as dry as dust. The Ancient Mariner is a very long poem, and to be able to pick a single line out of it like that is doing pretty well. Now, the fourth line, take, oh, take those lips away. Take, oh, take those lips away. We have 2 hands up. Mr. Kieran.
Which so sweetly are forsworn.
Yes, what's it from?
It's from one of the songs, interpolated songs in Shakespeare.
Yes, what play?
Oh, that's pretty tough.
Well, we're doing so well this evening. I think I can ask you these questions with some hope of getting the right answer. Take, oh, take those lips away that so sweetly were forsworn, and those eyes, the break of day, lights that do mislead the morn. It's from Measure for Measure. Perhaps one of the less popular plays of Shakespeare. Well, that's pretty good, getting 4 out of 4 that way. How about this one from Philip A. Cowan of Rensselaer, New York? Get 3 out of 4 if you can on this. In each of these groups, there's one term that's not like the others. Name the one that doesn't fit and explain why. Here's the first set of terms. Foot, rod, knot, mile, fathom. What one doesn't fit? Mr. Kieran.
Knot.
Why?
It's a rate of speed, not a measure of distance.
That's quite right. All the others are linear measures. A knot is a unit of speed used where, Mr. Kieran?
In maritime.
Yes, and what does it mean?
Well, ordinarily, it's translated into nautical miles per hour.
Yes, that's right. It's a rate of one nautical mile per rate of nautical miles per hour. Now, here's the second set of terms: gallon, quart, board foot, acre, liter. Which one doesn't fit? I have 2 hands up, Mr. Levant.
Acre.
Acre. That's right. Why, Mr. Levant?
You can't drink an acre.
That's right. You can't drink an acre. An acre is a.
I'm not so sure about that. How about an acre of apples?
Well, it's not aqueous.
Well, well, that's, I think, going rather far.
You're a hard
far,
man
far
if you can drink an acre of apples.
All the others, of hard course, are cubic measures. By the way, Mr. Levant, what is a board foot?
I was prepared to forget about that. I don't know.
Anybody want to take that up? A board foot? I think we all know what a gallon, a quart, and a liter are, but a board foot?
Well, a board foot is 12 inches square, but I've forgotten the thickness of it.
1 foot long, 1 foot wide, and 1 inch thick, or its equivalent, and it's a unit of measuring what?
Lumber,
yes, that's right. How about the following group? Allegro, crescendo, presto, andante. Mr. Kieran had his hand up, well, but he seated
do
it.
Do it once more, will you please?
I will indeed. Allegro, crescendo, presto, andante. One
easy
doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Now I have Mr. Henderson's hand up, Mr. Adams' hand up. Mr. Levant, do you want to cede to the non-musical gentleman?
Yes, I would. Have Mr. Henderson do it.
All right, Mr. Henderson. I'm sure Mr. Levant knows.
He's wrong.
Which one did you say, Mr. Henderson?
Presto. He's wrong.
Why do you say that?
He just appeals to him, but it's wrong.
Well, whoever wrote it can get $50 extra because I am embarrassed, and a man whose fraction of whose name is Signius Wilhelm Poole.
Who is
if
that?
I was embarrassed tonight, he'd pay $50 extra.
Really? Can he afford it, Mr. Henderson?
Well, not on his present salary.
He couldn't be a dollar a year man.
No, he isn't a dollar a year man.
I don't recognize those first names.
Signius Wilhelm Poole.
Who is that?
Well, I thought maybe if this pretty person that embarrassed me could figure that out, they might be able to get that name.
Well, I don't know.
The $50.
I'm glad you're going to get the $50.
I know Heather Kelly.
I'm going to have Mr. Levant. I'm going to have Mr. Levant tell you why you're wrong, Mr. Henderson.
Because they're all tempo marks except crescendo, which is a dynamic mark of nuance, of louder.
Yes, of volume.
Allegro is a question of metronomic speed, and so is presto, which is even faster, and andante is slow.
Yeah, you see, that's perfectly
crescendo
clear.
Means to swell and to get louder.
Perfectly clear, Mr. Henderson. All you have to do is have Mr. Levant explain it. Mr. Kieran?
At this late date, I would like to put in a mild doubt about your answer on the B question.
Have you been worrying about that B all this time?
He's been bumbling about it in my ear also.
What worries you about the bees?
I think that the difference in the bees, the raising of the young bees, is on the food that is fed to them. That the queens are raised on a certain food, the workers on another, and the drones on another. And I don't believe that the queen, which goes ahead and lays all the eggs in that hive, changes the shape, size, form, or content of any of the eggs in the actual laying of
them.
You're
putting up a darn good fight for the paternity
of the
bee. Old
man Kieran Maeterlinck.
I'm not so sure. John, you and I will have to fight out the bee a little later on in the evening. I believe, and I'm informed on good authority, that the bee, poor fellow, the drone bee, just has no papa. Mr. Levant?
Isn't that a tax evasion for the father bee? Is that why it was rigged?
That's a possibility. I'll give you an idea, Mr. Henderson. We're now going to have a musical question coming to us from Philip G. Birchall of Ferndale, Michigan. We have to get 2 out of 3 on this one, and the rest of you gentlemen can rest while Mr. Levant does all the work. Now, the studio pianist is going to play the storm passages of certain well-known compositions that contain storm and calm sequences. Mr. Levant is asked to play the description of the calm that follows the storm in each case. This will be the first instance in the history of information, please, in which Mr. Levant has been a soothing influence. We'll have the first storm passage. Studio pianist. Got it, Mr. Levant?
Mr. Karen can tell you. Go ahead, John.
What one is it, John?
That's some Wilhelm Tell. I can play that myself.
Mr. Kieran, you're taking the bread out of Mr. Levant's mouth. I bet he could, though. Go ahead.
Look, Mr. Fadiman, I think Mr. Kieran could play this next part.
Will you play it as Mr. Kieran would play it? Can you do that?
Yes. I'll play. He's doing it.
That's the true Kieran touch, as interpreted by Mr. Oscar Levant. And that's quite right. That's the calm sequence. Now the second storm passage. Got that? By the way, Mr. Kieran, how about that one?
No, sir. That's Oscar.
You bow out, eh?
Well,
Mr. Levant?
It's hard on a piano, a storm, which I'm sure was not written for the piano.
What's the passage? It's from what?
Well, according to the piano, it's from something vague by somebody.
No. It's the Pastoral Symphony of Beethoven.
I wouldn't know it on the piano, frankly.
You wouldn't know it on the piano?
No, those things are conceived for orchestra.
I wonder whether the studio pianist can give us just a few measures of the calm sequence. Do you have it there?
Well, I can do the calm sequence in the Pastoral Symphony if you ask for it.
Oh, I'll ask for it right now.
It's just calm, that's all. Wait a minute. What's next?
See, that's enough. That's enough for me, Mr. Levant. Very good. Now let's have the third and last storm.
Go ahead.
Got it, Mr. Levant?
Yeah. That's Wagner. That's the Flying Dutchman.
Oh, let's have a little more of it. Do you mind?
That's the spinning song. I can do all the things. And you want the other theme?
I want the calm.
Something like that.
Good enough. All right, that gives us about 2 3/4 out of 3. Thank you very much, Mr. Levant. Maybe we have time for this one from R. Johnson of Philadelphia. What coach developed these innovations in football? Get 2 out of 3. Single and double wing backs. Who was responsible for that? Mr. Kieran.
Well, Glenn Warner was...
Warner at Stanford. Now, how about the Minnesota shift? Mr. Kieran.
Well, John Heisman was the great usurer.
The one who developed the innovation itself, though. Mr. Levant.
I'll only do it after Mr. Kieran because I may be wrong.
Go ahead.
Is it Bernie Bierman?
You bet it is. That's right. Very good, Mr. Levant. How about the off-tackle play? Off-tackle play? Well, the answer is Dobie of Cornell. I guess that's a lucky strike for Mr. Johnson of Philadelphia, plus a set of the Britannica. And now, Mr. Cross, with some very timely remarks.
In these days of increased smoking, every smoker is interested in mildness, real mildness. And I saw that interest reflected at the tobacco auctions in the higher prices of certain types of tobacco. I saw Lucky Strike paying $30 a 100 pounds, while tobacco right in the next basket was selling for $10 or $15 less. Why are those more expensive tobaccos worth the money? Well, the reason Lucky Strike pays higher prices is to get the milder, lighter leaf. By analyzing tobacco all during the growing season, we find out where and how much of this finer, lighter, naturally milder leaf is going up for sale, and then we pay the price to get it. Well, you get what you pay for, and Lucky's finer tobaccos give you a milder, better smoke. The kind you want more than ever today if you're smoking more. So take a tip from the experts. Next time, ask for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross, and Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Henderson, for joining us tonight. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be on tap, and our two guests will be Jan Struther, author of Mrs. Miniver, and the famous playwright, novelist, and man of the theater, Mr. Elmer Rice. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps our experts, you not only get the sum of $25 in addition, but beyond that, the complete 24-volume set of the current edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Please remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Luckies pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Luckies 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.